Hey everybody, it's James. I just like to get here a little early sometimes since I was late last time. And John Mike is here too. Hey everybody, welcome to Rock in a Hard Place. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do this.
Let's do it.
Rock in a Hard Place.
Coming at you.
Engaged.
Wonderful to see you, my friend. We've spent the last several days together, which is awesome. Here we are in sunny but frigid Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. It's a high of 17.
It's 17 degrees. That's warmer than it was last night.
Yeah.
It was like 2 degrees last night, I think.
Totally.
Plus wind chill, which makes it sub-zero feeling. It was cold last night.
You got to feel bad for Neil and Matt in our band. Our bass player and our drummer live in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Yeah.
Let's look up what it is in Minneapolis right now. Hey, Siri, what is the temperature in Minneapolis, Minnesota? 2 degrees.
Much colder than here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, they've probably got like some sort of wind chill factor going on too.
But that should be air temperature, so it's probably colder than 2 with wind chill.
Yeah, like minus 12 or something. Goodness gracious.
And it's hot and humid there in the summer.
True.
They kind of get the worst of both. It's too cold in the winter and it's too hot in the summer. So I guess you just don't go outside?
I don't know. You know, I do have to say this though. We've been a lot of places around the world. We've been to a lot of different cities.
Yeah.
I love Minneapolis, actually. I think Minneapolis is a super fun city. Great music culture there.
Yeah.
Obviously, Prince is from Minneapolis. But, like, there's cool clubs there. We used to play at this club called, speaking of low temperatures, Club 3 Degrees all the time. We used to play.
Where did they get their name?
I don't know. And and then we got to play at the Target Center.
That's right.
Once or twice, at least, I think.
Yeah. And our suitcases got stolen out of our bus.
Oh, dude. That's right.
When
we were parked down on the street.
Yeah.
And,
There was one bay on our bus that the lock mechanism broke, so it would not lock.
Yep.
And we were like, well, we're downtown Minneapolis, but someone would have to like try all the bay doors and open this one. And
guess what they did?
It'll probably be fine for today. Like, we'll get it fixed soon. Because it broke while we were on tour.
Yeah.
It's like, we'll get it fixed soon and it'll be fine. Nope. Somebody opened the bay door and cleared out all of our luggage. Which,
man.
By the way, I mean, we're on tour. So, like, those are the clothes that you have, like, for the next month and a half.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like getting, like, robbed at your house.
It's like if someone came and
took... But they only took your clothes.
They took all the clothes out of your closet.
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't have any clean underwear. Yep. I don't have any t-shirts. I have no socks.
Yep.
But it was the Target Center, so I think there was a Target pretty close by.
Yes. Wasn't it also that weekend or whatever, or that same spot we were parked where like someone just like randomly opened the door and like came up into the bus and we were all sitting in there. We're like, get out.
I think so. Yeah. Somebody just had the audacity to just walk on
just
the bus.
Go in there.
See who's on there. It's probably someone famous. I'm going to just go see.
Oh man.
Yeah.
People have no chill.
No.
Hey, we thought we would maybe play, we'd bring back, hard questions. Hard questions.
That was a popular one.
Hard Place.
Yeah, that was a popular one a little bit ago. So
that one was all corporate sponsored. We had like Wendy's and McDonald's and Geico, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, if only they actually sponsored this podcast. That would have been cool.
Hey, let us know, Mickey D's. If you want to sponsor the podcast, reach out. I'm not above telling people to buy a quarter pounder of cheese.
I don't eat McDonald's, though. You can't.
Well, you can't because you're gluten-free and everything has gluten there.
Yeah. All right. So here we go. Another round of hard questions on Rock in a Hard Place.
Okay.
Are you going first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
Okay. Ready?
Yep. Okay. Wait. Hold on. We should explain the rules here again real quick for people that haven't heard this before.
Okay.
James has a question in his hand.
We have two types of cards.
Yeah.
Questions. And then the other cards have silly answers.
So these answers are pre-set. I have about 10 cards here that I have to choose from to answer the question that James is about to ask.
Right.
And so I have to come up with the best answer.
And I picked those out and then handed them to him. So he is just now seeing these for the first time.
Yeah.
And he has to pair them with this question. Ready?
All right.
Okay, the first one is this. They call me Mr. Blank. They call me Mr.
I'm going to go with Cheeto Fingers.
I was hoping you would choose that one.
Mr. Cheeto Fingers.
They call me Mr. Cheeto Fingers.
Why would you be called Mr. Cheeto Fingers? You must eat a lot that of must Cheetos.
To be a reputation and a half.
To get that nickname. All right, that card's used up. I'm going to go
okay.
This time. All right, James, are you ready?
I think.
Kids, Dad is trying something new this week. It's called blank.
Feminism.
Yes.
There's a couple other really good ones I almost went with, but that one was
that's pretty good.
Great.
Is there such a thing as male feminism?
Yeah, of course.
Is it?
I think it's, you know, we're trying to be funny right now, but I'll be serious for 1 second. We absolutely have the opportunity to advocate for not only our spouses and the other ladies in our lives, but females in culture in general.
Okay.
Absolutely. I think we have a responsibility to do so.
But we're definitely not women and can't speak for them.
Nope, we're not. But we can listen and we can help.
As our wives remind us.
Okay, I got another one. Ready? Back to funny.
Yes. All right, here we go.
So, coming soon, Batman versus blank.
Being adopted.
That is like his life story. Well, I guess he wasn't adopted. He was orphaned.
He was an orphaned, yeah. But he would, if after orphaned, he could have been adopted.
He could have been.
But he got adopted.
What if the story of Batman was he gets orphaned and then he gets adopted by like some wacky zany family.
By Joker.
And then,
Joker was his stepdad.
Whoa.
Ooh, we've got a new spinoff.
DC, call us.
All right. Wow. That got dark.
That did.
That's pretty Batman of us, though.
I only work in black and dark gray.
All right. You ready?
Yeah, I think so.
My favorite book is The Amazing Adventures of Blank.
James is shuffling through his cards, looking for the best answer. Read it again. Give me the setup.
All right. Here we go. My favorite book is The Amazing Adventures of Blank.
Death.
The Amazing Adventures of Death. Yeah. Death is the final adventure.
Isn't that what Captain Hook says at the end of Hook?
I think something like that, yeah.
That's a great movie. Okay, I got one more question for you. This one is a nice, a long one, okay? This reminds me of like a Jack Handy setup from like the old SNL writer, Jack Handy.
Okay.
All right, here we go. The warm August air was filled with change. Things were different, for Emily was now...
Oh, I've got a couple here. I'm trying to decide which one to go with.
Pick one.
Yeah.
You want the setup again?
Yep.
The warm August air was filled with change. Things were different, for Emily was now...
The government.
Nice.
Emily's
See, this one I chose because it said Emily on it, like your daughter.
Oh, yeah.
So Emily, your daughter, is the government.
Hopefully
now.
She's not actually the government.
Hopefully not.
If middle school girls ran the world, it would
be
interesting.
Do you got one more for me?
Place. All right, last hard question.
Okay, I need my answers.
Get your cards ready.
Okay. Go.
We're not supposed to go in the attic. My parents keep blank in there.
Voldemort.
Your parents have Voldemort in the attic.
Voldemort. We're not supposed to go in the attic. My parents keep Voldemort in there.
There you go.
That's he who shall not be named.
Yeah, that's the latest of hard questions on Rockin' a Hard Place.
Hard questions. Rockin' a Hard
Place. Let us know if you guys like that. We like having fun on this podcast.
We need to come up with like theme music for that.
Yeah, we should. Yeah, we'll have to write like some little...
We'll get right on that.
Jeopardy-esque.
Yeah. Speaking of writing music, that's something we've been doing the last few days. We've been working on some new tunes.
Yes. Been tracking some vocals most recently on a song called Breakthrough, which is exciting. And then we also have Midnight is another one we're working on.
Midnight's coming up and a song called Hold On.
Yep. So we got some good stuff coming. It's been cool to work on new music.
Yeah.
It's always fun to have.
You
want to
say briefly, just kind of like a big picture, what Breakthrough is about? Because I think it's very in line with like the kinds of things we talk about on here.
Yeah.
And things that, you know, with our new music, we're really trying to be open, honest, and vulnerable and write songs that are going to relate to people with where they're at and what they're feeling.
Yeah. I really tried to, with this song, like not put it in a box of mm-hmm. going, okay, I need to say these things. I need to say it in this way. It needs to sound pretty and have a bow on it. And it needs to have an answer at the end.
Right.
Like, I feel like a lot of times in our songs, it'll be like, all right, here's the question. Here's what's hard about life. But, you know, here's the answer. Mm-hmm. God is the answer, or this is the answer. But it, you know, when you read through the Psalms, like a lot of times it's just the end. like this is hard. You know, my soul is downcast. Sometimes they turn a corner and come back and right. be like, you know, so I'm going to encourage myself and God. And they make that corner, but not always. Sometimes it's just,
right.
this is hard. And I feel alone, or I'm struggling. And so for me, this was kind of one of those songs where I was like, I'm just going to write a song about where I'm at and what I'm dealing with and just leave it at that. Like, I don't have to have the answer, because I don't have the answer yet. I'm still walking through it. I'm still dealing with it. And I think there's probably people that can relate to that. They're like, yeah I'm still in the middle of it, and I haven't figured this out yet, and it's really hard.
Yeah.
And so for me, if you listened to episode 6 where I told my story, I think that kind of gives you like a good background of my life, and then over the last few years where I've been, and in my own progress of just trying to get healthy mental health, you know, seeing a counselor, those kinds of things. And I have to say, one of the things about the last few years is it's been really challenging, because I'm putting a lot of time, a lot of effort into getting healthier. And I think there has been some progress, and I'm thankful for that.
I can attest to this. There has been a lot of progress. I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
Yes.
But I'm still not doing well in a lot of areas.
Yeah.
And like internally, particularly, where stress and anxiety and depression and things like that continue to be at times like paralyzing.
Yeah. And you're literally feeling it in your body. In,
yes.
Like paralyzing.
Yeah.
Ways too.
Yeah. And it affects, you know, my breathing. And,
yep.
And I think I store a lot of stress in my low back too. I've had like low back pain for years. And it just affects your daily life. And you're working so hard to improve. And what I actually found was, as I started to unpack things, that some of those things actually got worse, because now I'm dealing with them. So like I'm
one, you were stuffing them away for a while and they were conveniently out of mind.
Yes. And so then you bring those to right to the surface and you know, it's like when you have an injury, if you think about the injury too much, you're very aware of how much it hurts.
Yeah.
And you know, and that's why oftentimes you try and distract yourself with other things. Like, I don't want to look at it. I don't want to think about it. Cause if I focus on it, it's be unbearable.
Yeah.
So I think with, you know, with internal stuff and with mental health things and some of those things too, as you start to unpack that, it actually almost gets messier and it makes it at times almost worse, cause you're having to deal with the stuff that you haven't dealt with in years. And that was getting pretty discouraging for me, honestly. And it felt very overwhelming, and I still wanted to continue my journey. But I was like, I'm tired. I'm really tired and I don't want to hurt anymore. And I'm tired of being tired. And then there was also this struggle with God of saying, if you are all knowing and all powerful, like, why can't you help me out here? Going, I know that the peace in my life is supposed to come from you. I feel like I'm doing my part. Where are you in this? And I just really want to break through and have that breakthrough moment where it's like, oh, okay, I get it now. I'm at peace now. God is here, and I feel okay, and I feel safe, and I feel better.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not been coming. And I keep trying, and I try, and I try, and I try, and I'm working, and, you know, going to counseling, and like, doing all the things, and it's frustrating. I'm just like, I just want a breakthrough. God, where are you?
Yeah.
Like, why won't you show up in this and make it better? And I think that it is a process, and that's part of it, right? If you can't just there's not a silver bullet where you can go, here's the solution. Just do this and it's done. When you've got, you know, decades and decades of things that you're unpacking, it's going to take a little while to process that.
Yeah. And it took a long time to get there.
Yeah.
It's going to take some time to undo that.
Yeah. And so it's been really hard. So anyways, writing that song was basically just this conversation that I've been having with God of being like, I just need a breakthrough, man. Yeah. I need it not only for myself, but also for my relationship with God, because I need it to know you in a real and intimate way. Because I feel separated from God in a lot of ways by my pain and that distrust that God is going to show up and carry me through it. Because I'm like, I feel very alone a lot of times in the process and going, God, where are you in this?
Yeah.
And this is not getting better. It's getting harder. And, you know, and then you go to scripture and be like, you know, you're the peace that passes understanding. Like, what the heck?
Yeah.
Where is that right now? Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm trying to do the things to find that and then feeling a bit like God's not showing up at times. And so that, just from that honest place of going, God, I need a breakthrough.
Yeah.
I need it to know who you are, to understand who you are, to know you better and more intimately and more deeply.
And please don't let this go on forever.
Yeah. And I can't keep doing this forever.
Yeah.
Because it's so hard.
Yeah.
And then I just left it at that.
Yeah.
Like, God, I'm pursuing you. I want you to show up in my life and I really need a breakthrough. So please throw me a bone here.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a song about pleading with God for a breakthrough.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, but I think this is also kind of in the balance of this conversation we keep having, that's not a word. This conversation we keep having, you know, like we're approaching this pleading with God for a breakthrough with the intention of continuing to follow him and trust him and hold on to him. Like,
yeah,
I'm not giving up on you. I'm still searching for you. I recognize times in the past where you have answered me.
Yeah.
And I know you will again. I'm calling out to you now. I'm in need of a breakthrough now.
Yeah.
Because what we see too often, and with even friends of ours that we've known and you know, had relationships with over the years, like there's this kind of moment where they like hit the self-destruct button and it's like, no, it's all over. I'm done with this.
God didn't show up for me right here the way I needed him, or at least the way I think I needed him. So I'm out.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing is oftentimes we have parameters on what a breakthrough looks like.
Yeah.
And how we want God to show up for us.
Yeah.
And I think
that was really interesting about like what Nate said when we had Nate on the podcast,
yeah,
where he was like, I put, you know, like literally put my seed money into asking God to answer our prayers. And he did answer our prayers, but he did it by getting us fired, making us leave, getting us uncomfortable, and getting us to a place where we had to give up on those things that we were putting our trust in.
Totally. And all the preconceived notions of what that was supposed to look like, it literally was the opposite.
Yeah.
And with that result, it would have been easy to be like, fine, I'm out.
Yeah.
Like, I did what I was supposed to, and God gave me the opposite result, therefore, I don't want anything to do with him.
Right.
But really, as Nate shared, it was like, no, God was actually doing something completely different in putting us into a new season. And those things had to go away in order for us to move into that new season and be more healthy and have a better understanding of him and to move into that next season of life and the things that were going to happen. And so it was very painful. And that wasn't what they thought they were signing up for. But we put these parameters, I think, of like, okay, God, I'm going to do my part. And then your part's going to look like this. You know, I want a new pony. I want a new, so, you know, if I'm a good boy, then you'll get me my pony, you know, and it's not that way at all. It's God, I think, oftentimes walking us through even sometimes harder times to see the ultimate big picture result be better. But when you're in it, you're so close to it, all you can see is the pain and the discomfort and just trying to get through it. And that's hard. It's really hard. And I'm still walking through that. Like today, I'm still dealing with a lot of these things and still in those places of going, God, I'd still like more of a breakthrough here.
Yeah.
You know, help me out. And those things are still daily things I'm praying for and asking for and hoping for. And some days I do better than others. Some days I'm like, I don't know if this is ever going to change, and I can be very discouraged. And then there's other days where it's like, hey, I see some progress and I see some good in the midst of the struggles. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it continues to be challenging.
On those days where you feel like a little shot of energy, or you observe something, or is there like a common thread? Is it like maybe, galvanized by talking with other people and having a response really sink in to where you're like, okay, I'm not alone in this, or they have experienced a solution in that same way, or I don't know. Like, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think for me, it's really tied to hope.
Yeah.
And I have a complicated relationship with hope because mm-hmm. I feel like...
You fear hoping sometimes. I fear sometimes.
It because I feel like my expectations have been let down so many times.
Right.
And there's been so many times that just even culturally, that what was taught to me and told to me let me down. And what I mean by that is, let's just use the American culture of you get good grades, you work hard, you go to college, you get a degree, you get a good job, you make good money, you have a nice house, you have a wonderful family, white picket fence, the American dream, right? Like, this is sold to us from the time we're little kids, virtually everybody in America, right? Like, this is a cultural thing. And so then I go out and I'm like, I got straight A's, I got a degree, I worked hard, I started a business, my business was successful. Check, 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 check. And then it all blew up. And then like nothing went like it was supposed to. And there was a whole bunch of pain at the end of that journey. Yeah. And then I go, well, why did I get straight A's? Mm-hmm. Like, because to me, that correlation, I'm like, what was the point if it was all going to blow up in my face anyways?
Yeah.
And so that kind of like contingent hope, I guess, where you go, if I work hard, then I'll get this. And there is some truth. Obviously, if you don't work hard, you're not going to get very far. If you just sit down, you're not going to move.
Right.
So that you do have to get out and do things and move. It is just physics. But the expectation, I think, is that if it's done this way, then the outcome will be this way. And it doesn't always work that way. And so sometimes you work really hard and it doesn't work out. And sometimes you work really hard and it goes really good.
As I'm hearing you say that, I find myself thinking, is that really hope, though? That's, to me, that's like, that's not actually hope.
Yeah. And
it's, I think, something else.
I think it kind of comes back to maybe what Nate was saying, the difference between like happiness and joy too, right? Like, joy is this deeper state of being. It's you who you are. It's
what you're choosing. In spite of what's happening and how you feel.
And happiness is like, I like this. This
you're
is
experiencing
fun.
This, it. Yeah.
Experiencing it. And so I think there's a bit of that. But again, and as I shared kind of more in depth on my story,
right,
my whole
like
life,
how it's taught to you.
Yeah. And my whole life was performance based. My value was wrapped up in what I did.
Right.
So it's very hard to separate those things when that's the way that you operate and move through life.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, I've been disappointed so many times with outcomes that I thought should have been different, that I did all the right inputs. You know, when you go 2 + 2, equals
5.
What? Or 1. You're like, you know, how did we go backwards? Like, that was supposed to go up, not down. Yeah. Like, I don't understand. Yeah. And so when you get those outcomes enough times, then you get afraid to hope for good things in the future. And so I have this tendency then to, if I get a glimmer of hope, like, hey, maybe there is good stuff on the horizon. Maybe tomorrow is going to be a great day. There's a tendency for me just to freaking squash it.
Feel anxious about it?
Oh, and just be like, no, not, it never works out like it's supposed to.
Kill it. Like, smother it with like dismissiveness and negativity.
Yeah, because that's never, I don't want to hope because I don't want to get disappointed again.
Because hate that feeling.
I hate that. So if I grab onto that and I go, hey, I think things are looking up. Like, I think tomorrow's going to be a good day. I kill it so that if tomorrow's not a good day, I'm not disappointed.
Yeah.
It's like, well, my expectation was low, so it's fine. But then that leaves you in a spot where it's just really negative all the time. And there's nothing to look forward to. And and it's really bleak. And so I coming back to where the days are a little bit better, I guess, is where maybe there is a glimmer of hope that seems genuine or true. And maybe even, I would say, instead of happiness existing in that joy place, a deeper, like, hey, this is good. And just to give you an example, Caleb, my son, is 18 years old, and it's been a challenging time. Anybody that's had an 18-year-old kid, they're spreading their wings. They're trying to, you know, be a grown person, but they're still a teenager. Mm-hmm. And so we've had some challenges just parenting and trying to walk with him. And yet, in some ways, I can look at it and go, oh, it's getting worse, because some of those friction and some of the decisions that he makes is harder to deal with, right? Mm-hmm. And they feel like bigger issues as he gets older. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, with all the work that I've been doing and trying to change the way that I look at the world and the way that I relate to other people, and as I've been learning and growing, I really believe my relationship with him has gotten so much better in the last few years. And so that's one of those things where I go, yeah, it's really hard right now. And a lot of the circumstances are really hard because of his age and just the decisions he makes sometimes. And you're like, what were you thinking, dude? And you have to deal with that. And that's really hard. But in the kind of little bit bigger picture, I'm like so thankful that when the chaos happens in his life, that we're actually talking about it. And yeah. I'm walking with him through it. Yeah. And I think that had I not maybe changed some of the trajectory in my life of doing a lot of the work that I've done, I don't know that I'd be walking with him in the same way or at all at this point through this season of his life. So I'm really grateful for that. And so that's one of those things that's like a bigger, deeper, like, wow, this is actually really cool. And I'm really grateful for that. And that brings about kind of that deeper underlying joy and like true hope, I guess.
Yeah.
For things that are meaningful and more eternal and relational. And yeah, but it's hard to balance that with, but yeah, the circumstances are really hard.
I think it's also important to learn not to underestimate your ability to handle when things go poorly, because things are certainly going to go poorly again in the future, perhaps the near future, and perhaps again after that, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's important to learn to not underestimate your ability to synthesize those moments. Or something I do is I try and shelter people from the bad news I think is going to wreck them, because I don't want to deal with that.
Yeah.
And so I have to learn to not underestimate my ability to handle when negative things happen, and also others, and give them that freedom too. And the trust that comes, the back and forth kind of trust that comes from that in those relationships where we know we can depend on each other for that, you know?
Totally.
But yeah, hope, it's an interesting thing when, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, things on these episodes that have happened to us, and we've tried to make a lot of it lighthearted and point out that there were great experiences and funny, weird moments too. But we definitely, and Nate even pointed this out, he's like, man, you guys have had a lot of crazy stuff happen to you. It does make it hard, I guess, sometimes to step forward into hope without having anxiety about going through that feeling again of getting let down again.
Yeah. And I tried to explain it, I think, in one of my, with my counselor at one point, of like, when, if you turn around and get punched in the face every time you turn around, at a certain point you start flinching every time you turn around.
Yeah.
Cause the expectation is this has happened over and over and over. So, and then you're like, I don't even want to turn around, cause if I turn around, there's a good chance I'm going to get punched in the face again. And I think for me that really depleted my ability to have any kind of resiliency too. Hmm. So that's been something I've been thinking a lot about too, is just resilience and how to manage moving through hard things, and not getting bogged down and stuck in them. Hmm. And I know that's something that's, for people that have gone through trauma, you know, and war veterans and soldiers, and like resiliency is something that as you try and get back to normal life, sometimes the very simple little tasks and little challenges can become overwhelming.
Yeah. Sending an email, yeah. Going to the store.
Yeah. And I've experienced that. Like, just simply sending an email that sometimes it's not the email, it's all of the other stuff. And you can't bring yourself to get back to a place where it's just an email. It's all of the things. And, and that really, that builds up and has made me not very resilient versus, you know, a lot of the hardships when I was in my 20s, I was young and I just had way more bandwidth, I think, too, because I hadn't gone through all things I'd gone through, hadn't hit that point. And also young and dumb, there's a certain amount of ignorance that that allows you to just move forward and not know how hard things might become.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think that's a theme too, something I've been learning is just resiliency. And but ultimately, kind of coming back to the song and what we're doing now, my goal with this song too was just to be honest, to not have an answer or not feel like I have to have an answer, to not feel like it had to be in a certain package. And in the song, I talk about anxiety and the battle within my own head.
Yeah. And we tried to describe what it feels like even in the lyrics.
Yeah. And I think that is unique and new for me in the songs that I've written. If you listen to a lot of the songs over our career, almost always they have a turn that's like, and here's the answer, or, and it's going to uplift in some way. And, or they're very conceptually like Sea of Faces, like this very encouraging that God is with me, God is for me.
Yeah. Even though there's billions of people, God has an intimate personal relationship with me.
Yeah. And so, you know, a lot of our songs were very much kind of in that vein, and that's great. Like, I want to encourage people, but at the same time, where I'm at right now, I go, there's probably people that need to hear this too.
Yeah. And thematically within our other songs too, we're also just seeing how many other people are hurting in these ways.
Yeah.
And how damaging these things that have crept into the church are. Mm-hmm. And so I feel sort of a responsibility to like hold up a mirror to the church and, and appeal to Christians to say, look, don't we want to do better than this together?
Like, totally.
Aren't all of us seeing this and saying these things? Like, don't we want to do better than this together? And like, isn't it time to trust each other again? And, you know, so like that is thematically like one of my, that's where I'm trying to aim to when we are writing new songs and, you know, We just want to be sharing about these experiences that we're having.
And I think the other thing right now with the music that we're doing that's maybe different from the past is we've made a really conscious effort to not play the game that the industry wants us to play, that the church culture maybe wants us to play, the pressures that we've had over the years to sound a certain way, to write a certain way, to do things a certain way. I think we've really consciously with the music that we're doing right now, as we've kind of come back, we said, if we're going to come back and keep making music at this point in our career, at this point in our lives, we're not going to play all the games and do the industry stuff because we want to be genuine and real and present who we are, not what the industry wants us to be.
Right.
And I think this probably can be most wrapped up throughout our career in the question that we get asked all the time. We've been getting asked this question really since about 2005, is, are you guys a rock band or are you a worship band?
Yeah.
And that kind of identity split, that dual personality.
Every time we get ready to release new music or a new record, the how heavy is it going to be question.
Is this a rock record or a worship record?
Yeah.
And what kind of band are you guys?
Yep.
And so that identity, that bipolarness of our career really began in 2005 with Strong Tower, I think. And that is an interesting season and time because I think we both feel pretty conflicted about that record and about that time period and what that did for the rest of our career, both good and bad, mm-hmm. that brought us to this day today, where ultimately we're done making music, stepped away for a few years,
yeah,
and then came back and we're like, okay, we got to do it different as we come back. So if we go back to 2005 and we had Sea of Faces was doing well, we have two records out now, our self-titled and then Sea of Faces, and mm-hmm. the records are doing well, we're a rock band, we're gaining momentum. And at that time, worship music was really starting to take off. It was, I feel like, the beginning of kind of, like, now
it's predominantly throughout the CCM industry.
Yes.
Yeah.
You were starting to hear worship music on the radio. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, it was like Michael W. Smith and Amy Grant and, you know, more what I would call like pop, adult contemporary artists. Mm-hmm. There was some worship stuff, but I felt like kind of that worship movement was happening. A lot of the big mega churches like were starting kind of their own mm-hmm. worship programs totally. And their worship bands.
Yeah,
and
this is when we first started to hear about like Hillsong
yeah,
songs. And
they
stuff
were really
like
starting to gain right. traction. Right. And that was like the new thing that was, for lack of a better way of saying it, like just honestly, it was selling the best.
Yeah.
Within the Christian sphere.
Yep.
And so the label came to us as kind of the hot new band and was like, we want you guys to do a worship record.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think also because we did, that was part of our background.
Like yes.
playing at church, our home church, the genesis of our band itself prior to the September 11th experience that we talked about in episode one, you know, the genesis of the band itself was, you know, put together at a college dorm to, lead, chapel services for the school and play worship music and stuff. So like that was something we were doing. But that was more because we just liked doing that. I don't think we really associated that with like the identity of our band, or maybe we did. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe yeah. this is a good opportunity for us to talk about if we have a different perspective about that, because I didn't necessarily view that as something that was almost like something we do in our free time to me.
Yeah. And it was a part of it, like for me, and I know we had different backgrounds growing up, but for me, my music was very steeped in the church. It was developed yeah. in the church. It that's where it began. And there's a lot of artists that are like that. I know the Jonas Brothers were like,
yeah.
grew up playing
yeah.
in church. Like yeah. that's where they got their start. And so that was me too, right? Like playing in front of people for the bulk of my life up to that point had been in church. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, we started out playing worship together in college. That's where we first started playing music together. So it was definitely interwoven just in how we did music and who we are. But when it came to Strong Tower and the label coming to us and being like, hey, can you guys, you know, we want you to do a worship record. In my mind, at least at that time, this was like doing a Christmas record. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We'll do like you do a Christmas record that doesn't make you a Christmas band.
Yeah.
you don't automatically become Mannheim Steamroller because you did a Christmas record.
Nice. Right?
And so I think, you know, in my head, I was like, okay, we could do that because we've done worship, you know.
Yeah.
It's part of our upbringing. It's part of our foundation of our band. That makes sense. But in my mind, we were still a rock band and that's what we're doing. We're like, cool, we're going to do this kind of special project because this is what the label wants and potentially maybe this is what our fans want too. I don't know.
Hmm.
And then the struggle for me was, is it okay to do a worship record? Because that's the smart financial and business decision.
To be successful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, so I was really conflicted over that because I was like, I feel like that's very much the wrong reason to do a worship record.
Mm.
And so I was really struggling with that and going, is this the right thing? And I remember I met with our pastor at that time and kind of shared with him, you know, like
this dilemma.
This is a dilemma. Like, I don't know what to do. Do I hold my line and be like, no, we're not doing it because everyone wants us to do this because they know it's going to be successful.
Yeah.
And be like, I can't in good conscience do that. Or do we just do it because we know we could do it well and it'd probably be great? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and he told me that he's like, well, you know, it's kind of like the cart and the horse. Like, what do you want to do? Where do you want to go? What do you want to? I was like, well, we want to reach as many people as we can. And, you know, and kind of laid that out. And he's like, well, does this do that? And I was like, yeah. You know? And so he was kind of like, well, you know, the way I see it, like, if it's working in the same vein of where you're headed and what your goals are and what you feel like God's calling you to do, like, that's great. And ironically now, though, it's funny because I look back on it, I was like, I was doing the same measurement of like, well, success equals God's blessing, kind of, you know, yeah, like we want to do all these great things for God and reach all these people. And not that that's wrong, but I'm equating success with movement of God. And you see what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. like, so if we do this record and it reaches more people, then
validation that you're following God and that you're doing it right.
And we're doing more ministry. Mm-hmm. And that's somehow better than me just discipling one dude, mm-hmm. you know, like, cause now we're reaching more people and it's bigger, it's better, it's mm-hmm. shinier, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's something too, I'm still like that very American viewpoint.
Yeah.
I'm realizing like, okay.
More customers.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm realizing, okay, so maybe that logic still wasn't exactly the way I should have looked at that.
Right.
But for me, at least that kind of got the burden off of my shoulders of like, okay, no, we do care about ministry. We do want to reach more people. This serves that goal. So that kind of reconciled the ethics of it for me of not just being like, we want to make more money, so let's do worship music.
Yeah.
It wasn't quite so ethically that way to me. Maybe it was for the label, I don't know. But for us,
I think honestly to them it's as simple as this is a good idea, this is one of our successful bands, albums like this are starting to pop up in the marketplace, so let's see if they want to do one.
Yeah, why wouldn't we?
It was probably just as simple as that.
Yeah.
And you know, we had to deal with the internal conflicts.
Totally. Yeah, because it's our deal. It's our band. It's our lives. Yeah, there's like, you should do this. This is a great idea.
Yeah.
You're like, but I don't know. So, I think for me, that was like, okay, let's do this one-off special record. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it was so much that way that we actually adapted our record contract.
Yeah, we had a separate contract for Strong Tower.
For Strong Tower, yeah. Because it was technically a cover record, mm-hmm. because a lot of those songs were well-known worship songs that we didn't write.
Right.
They weren't original. And in our contract, we were supposed to provide original material for our songs. That mm-hmm. was like part of the requirement of our contract.
Right.
We had a 6-record deal. Mm-hmm. And so Strong Tower, because of the way that was all set up, and it was kind of a side deal, we actually set up like a separate contract for that record, and it did not count towards one of our 6 as a result, which meant that we were actually 7 records in, plus the live DVD / mm-hmm. live in Portland, which also was a special thing. And, so 8 records really,
but and time Christmas I, EP.
That's right.
In the long run.
Yeah.
So that was part of that original term.
8.5/9 records on our 6 record deal.
Yeah.
It took forever to get through that record contract. But so there was a lot of things in place to me that said, this is just a side thing mm-hmm. that we're going to do. And for good reason, it'll probably do well. It'll reach more people. People will probably love it. I think we can do a good job at it. And so we jumped into it and said yes. And we had Aaron who'd produced our first couple records. It was going to be the same team. Aaron Sprinkle produced it. So, you know, it was really all the same stuff. And so in my mind too, I thought, well, we're a rock band. Let's do on this record kind of what, for me, Sonic Flood had done.
Right. I was going to ask about that. That was a big influence for you.
Yeah. I think I was like in high school maybe when their record came out, and I was like, whoa, I've never heard worship music sound like this. This is cool. And it felt relevant to me, and it was something I liked a lot more than the musical styles of the worship music that was happening at that time. And so I thought, well, what if we took that a step further? We're a lot heavier band than Sonic Flood was. Mm-hmm. Like, what if we took some of this worship music into kind of this heavier, like hard rock genre with big, thick guitars? And What I didn't know was that we were going to get some creative pushback from the label and from some of the A&R people, because they wanted this to be accessible mm-hmm. to the marketplace. So we were pushing to go heavier mm-hmm. and they were like telling Aaron, like, dial it back, man. We got to keep this, keep this so it's accessible. And so there was a bit of a push pull happening throughout the record as well, creatively, because of the marketability of it. And so again, kind of this theme of, that's hard. Like, it's not just, oh, we're going to make this record and it's going to be great and we're going to do what we want. Like, there was some real business attachments to it, some marketability attachments to it.
Yeah.
This thing needed to look a certain way, be a certain way. And we were trying to find that place of still being ourselves and do it well. And honestly, I didn't feel like the record was even done. I remember we had a timeline, we had to have it finished. And I think we had, like, FedEx closed at like 5 p.m. the day we had to have it sent off to mixing. Mm. And I think we walked it into FedEx at like 4:59.
Wow.
It was like overnighted it to the mix engineer.
Yeah.
And I remember feeling actually pretty angry as we shipped it out, because I was like, it's not ready. Like, there's mistakes on it still, like stuff that I can still find stuff in the original recording. Mm. I can't think of it off the top of my head where they're at, but
sure.
There's little things that I wanted to go back and tweak and fix. We didn't have time because we were on a timeline. Again, the business machine kept rolling and there was stuff already in motion that we just had to go. And so I remember when we sent that record in, like, it's done, tracking's done, mix and master now. I remember feeling like, this is not the project that I wanted to do.
Hmm.
This is not what I wanted. Like, we need more time. It's not done yet. And it's so funny because it just didn't matter.
Right.
Obviously.
Right.
But
And what do you mean by it didn't matter?
Well, no one seemed to mind. That no one found the little errors that were in there.
Right.
And people loved it.
No one has ever come up to us and said, no. You know, this part, minutes and
yep.
so many seconds.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Which, ironically, what's really funny is I actually just saw one of our old sound guys, Jonathan Smith.
Oh, yeah.
He posted on Facebook just recently. I just happened to see it in my feed. He found an error in an old... I forgot if it was like Rush or somebody. I forgot what band it was, but like a really, really well-known band.
Yeah.
And he found an error in one of the background vocals and like just on the recording and he pointed it out, and it was hilarious because now like everyone's like, oh my gosh, that's all I hear now.
Yeah.
But he'd heard it hundreds of times or thousands of times and never noticed it. Nobody ever noticed it. And then
interesting.
Leave it to the audio guys who are listening to every little tiny
and he's got a great detail. Ear
yeah so. It was just funny. So there, I know it happens even with like huge bands with records we've listened to all the time. There's mistakes done in there that we never hear. But yeah, so that record, I was very conflicted as it went out. Mm-hmm. I was like, this isn't what we really, it's not done yet. Mm-hmm. It's half baked. But then of course it was hugely successful and really took off. But during that whole time too, that's kind of my side perspective. Yeah. I know you were dealing with the real challenges of this genre of music, the style of music.
Yeah, I was conflicted as well, but for very different reasons.
Yeah.
I just felt so out of place, honestly. I didn't know what I could possibly offer to this project if every time I was going to give my input, it was, you know, ignored. Or if every time I was going to try and play a part the way I do as the guitarist that I am, every time I would do that, then it would be pulled back, like you said. Like, no, we got to pull that back. We got to, you know, let's replace that with strings instead, like stringed instruments, you know, orchestra type sound instead.
And do you think that's, I mean, I know a lot of your musical influences have been in like the heavier rock and metal side.
Yep.
And so typically you're like, this is what I bring to the band, is this kind of heavier side. And now we're doing a record where
none of that,
that's getting pushed out. And so you feel like I'm getting pushed out.
I think
with that,
I don't know if I was as evolved with that concept at the time, but I, looking back on it, I definitely think that's how I felt.
Yeah.
I felt like this intrinsically pushes me out.
Yeah.
At least all the way to the margins, you know, ignored, you know, irrelevant. Mm-hmm. I also, you know, I love writing songs and I love recording and being in the studio and, you know, making up new parts on the fly and adding stuff. And all these songs were already songs. They were other people's songs.
Yeah.
There was nothing for me to do. There was no creativity for me to add.
Yeah. I will say though, I do think over our career, we've done a pretty good job of being creative with doing worship songs and other people's stuff. And
I think I've learned how to be good at that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cause I do think some of the versions of our song or of the songs that we've done, like on our worship records, mm-hmm. like, there's some that I think were like pretty cool arrangements that we were very creative yeah. with. And the Christmas record too, I think was the EP.
Yeah.
Especially so.
I feel like by the time we made Alpha Omega is where I felt like I was good at that finally.
Okay. Yeah. But it took some time to be like, okay, I'm going to take
this other person's song. And it took this process, this album that we're talking about, Strong Tower, and reflecting on it for years and years. Because we did, you know, we made Strong Tower in 2005. We made Alpha Omega in 2017.
Yeah.
You know, so I had learned and had perspective and I had matured and I had learned to let go of my, you know, just stuff like that. I had learned to let go of that stuff and be a part of the creative process in different ways. But at the time, it was really hard for me. I didn't want to do other people's songs. I didn't want to do an album stylistically that I felt like I had nothing in common with. I didn't want to be in the studio because I also felt like interpersonally within the band there were it was like a competition every day. Really felt like that. I didn't feel like I was in competition with you necessarily, but you kind of automatically always have a seat at the table because it's your voice that's going on the record, you know. So at the time I was just like, I kind of noticed that you were just trying to pay attention with Aaron to like stay in it and stay focused and get things done, even though by the time we turned it in, it didn't feel done to you. But you were also, I think perhaps, maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, but it felt like you were also annoyed with the clamoring for attention that was going on within our band and arguments and conflict. And I don't know if you even noticed, but around that time, I just started disappearing all the time. And I mean, literally, like I wouldn't come to the studio. I would just go walk around the city most of the day. And then when we started to go on tour for this, I would wake up early, get out of my bunk. I would leave and go somewhere else. Like some days, I would just go like sit at a park a mile away for like hours. And then I'd come. I'd look at my phone and see, oh, showtime in a couple hours. So I'd go back, you know, and then I'd go to bed right after the show. I'd go get in my bunk, close the curtain. And I just like hated it. And I almost quit our band. Like during this process through recording Strong Tower. And then once we went out and toured it, and you know, one of our great friends, Matt Hamilton, who was one of the pastors at our church and, is still a great friend of ours. And, you know, he's now a board member for, our nonprofit organization, our ministry that we do. Matt literally like flew out and spent some days with us. And in particular would like go sit with me during the day and we would talk about stuff and he would just be like, and in the context of what we've been talking about often, I don't feel like Matt was trying to tell me what to do or influence me in an unhealthy way. But Matt would sit with me and just be like, don't quit, man. You can't quit. You know, and he would remind me what was important about what we were doing that was so integral to my life and how I fit into that. And I'm really grateful for his care and compassion towards me as a friend, and his friendship over the years has really meant a lot to me. But
yeah,
that was a tough period of our career, and I literally almost quit Cutlass back then.
Which, from the outside perspective, seems crazy, because yeah, our career was like, this was kind of the rocket ship
yep,
to the next level. I mean, Strong Tower was blowing up. Our tours were getting bigger. You know,
yeah,
the radio single, frankly, was doing really well.
It's why I have a house.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it really took us from, yeah, like just trying to get enough money to get to the next show to where we could eat right, that like day.
That January 2004 yeah, yeah, story.
Like yeah, we can literally put gas in our tank so that we can get to the next show, like yeah, literally living day to day, hoping we played enough shows to be able to afford the next one.
Right.
To where we actually were on salary. This was a business, and we began to actually
plan things.
Yeah, yeah. And we were providing like enough to have like a family. And yep, I mean, the perception again was that people would think that we made millions and millions of dollars and that we all had mansions. That is not the case, but it was at least a respectable job, and we were,
yeah,
we were making yeah, money like a normal person working a normal job.
Yeah.
Before, we were definitely like poverty level. and in fact, I lived in low income housing for a season early yep, on in the band, because we literally didn't make any money.
Survived off of Subway gift cards and yeah, dollar menu Wendy's.
Yeah. And it just was, we didn't yeah, have any money. And so, yeah, so this was like,
which is ironic looking back at it, since you now know that you're allergic to gluten.
Yeah.
And like, you were just cramming the gluten.
Yeah.
Back then.
Yeah. Although Subway was better than the Wendy's double bacon cheeseburgers that I used to do.
Taste wise or outcome?
Outcome.
Okay.
Yeah. I was definitely not looking my healthiest when I was eating two junior yeah, bacon cheeseburgers.
Yeah, you end up frequently, looking like a junior bacon cheeseburger.
Yeah, yeah. But and being an athlete my whole life too, that was, well, that's yeah, actually why, I don't know if I've told this story or not. Total tangent here.
Go for
but
it.
I came home for Christmas after being on the road, and we were so poor at the time that the reason I was doing the junior bacon cheeseburgers was because at that time they were 99 cents. And so I could get two of them for $1.98 and like junior bacon cheeseburger, and I'd be full. Like two junior bacon cheeseburgers, you're like, I'm full, I'm good, I don't need any more food. So I'm like, I can eat for under $2. What else? Even Taco Bell, I'm not full for $2.
Sure.
You know? So I was like, this is the cheapest way that I can be full.
Yeah.
So I did that a lot.
Uh-huh.
Because it was saving money and I was full. So very practical. And I came home for Christmas, and my parents were like, are you doing okay? I was like, yeah, why? They're like,
you look
puffy. How are you eating? How's your diet? Like, what are you eating? I was like, I eat a lot of junior bacon cheeseburgers.
Oh.
And so, well, why? Well, because it's cheap. And, you know, so that Christmas, I think, if I recall correctly, it's been a minute, so I could be off on my numbers here, but I think they got me a $500 whoa, Subway gift card.
Wow.
Like, which is a lot. Yes. Like of Subway.
Yes.
And at that time, Subway was still doing stamps.
Yeah.
So like every time I would get a sandwich, I would get stamps too. So that $500.
So every like 10th one was free yeah, then also.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. So that $500 gift card.
Life hack.
I ate on that thing for like almost the entire year. Like yeah, it was like my on the road, instead of getting the junior bacon, I was like, I can go get Subway. I did the Jared diet to yeah, get away from my junior bacon cheeseburger. And so it actually was one of the best gifts they probably could have given me, because it helped me eat a little healthier.
Yeah.
When literally I didn't have any money.
Survive. Yeah. Yeah.
Because otherwise I would have just kept on my journey towards a heart attack with junior bacon cheeseburgers and saving a couple bucks.
Yeah.
Because the Subway sandwich is like, even back then, was like $6, you know, or $7 yeah, bucks for.
Totally.
So that was like, yeah, and then every 10 sandwiches or whatever, I'd get a free one, and that nice, would extend me out a little bit further.
Yeah.
You know? And so it, yeah, it kept me alive. And I did. I looked much healthier a few months later than I did
nice,
prior to that. So total tangent there, but
it's a good tangent. Funny. That's the inside baseball that we're talking about though here. People are like, oh yeah, they're a huge band. They must, you know, eat caviar for breakfast, lunch, and dinner and live in a mansion.
It's junior bacon cheeseburgers.
No, no.
Funny thing is Caleb, my son, is working at Subway right now.
That's right. Sandwich artist.
Yep. Full circle.
Nice.
So if you come into the local Subway here, he might make your sandwich for you. Yeah. But so anyways, I mean, I guess rewinding here to Strong Tower, it's actually putting us in a position where we can pay our bills and, like you said, get a house and kind of have a more normal life.
Yeah.
And yet, and our shows are getting bigger. That's what you want as a band.
Yeah.
Your radio singles are doing well. That's what you want as a band.
Mm-hmm.
Records are selling. That's what you want as a band. And you're going, I want to quit. Which is not what anybody would think. At that point, you're like, you're probably on cloud nine going, this is awesome. Like, our career's blowing up. But you're going, this is miserable. And do you think that was mostly because, even if you're in a place that's successful and things are going well, if you can't be yourself and you can't be who you are, it can feel suffocating and debilitating.
Yes. And a big part of who I am or who I perceive myself to be is, you know, very relationship. I'm very, you know, communication. I want to meet people's emotional needs in a deep way. I want to feel needed. I want to feel that homeostasis within a group dynamic and relationships, that I'm part of the glue there, and that I'm helping people love themselves and love the project together. Like that is really kind of a core vision of who I am, to be totally honest. And so the conflict was twofold for me. Artistically, I didn't feel like I belonged. I didn't feel like it was, it just didn't feel like me. And then, you know, there were just some really tough things about relationships in our band at that time. And I literally just, I mean, I hate to sound, you know, hyperbolic or dramatic here, but like, I hated my life.
Mm-hmm.
I hated it, dude.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to go home and be with Lindsay and just leave it all.
Yeah. And again, that's where it's so funny, because we desire all these things, right? Like, if I had told you 5 years earlier, in 2005, this is going to happen, and I just gave you all the stats, you'd probably be like, awesome.
Yeah.
But then you get there and you're like, wow, this isn't at all what I thought or what it could have been.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, that's, you know, such an existential question. It's kind of hard to even think, in an accurate way, how I would have taken information like that. 'Cause you got to understand that, like, we were, you know, as listeners have heard, like, our career started and we were really young. I was 19.
Yeah.
And so we were young. And by 2005, we're still young people. And I didn't really even have the capacity to grow and mature and observe these things in the way that I have now to reflect on it over the last 20 years of our career. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I really don't know. And I think that's important to say too. I'm not looking back on that all and feeling like it was right or wrong. And I'm also not feeling like it's even possible to say whether it's right or wrong. There were things that were wonderful about that season of our career.
Yeah.
And, you know, just to let people know, I actually really love playing Strong Tower in our shows. Like, musically, I actually like the parts. I like playing the song on guitar. I like the guitar parts. I like the way we play it. We're locked in on that song. You know, it's one of the songs we pretty much play all the time. So we're locked in. There's a tangible response from the crowd. You know, you can feel the energy change. You can feel that they're like, oh, yes, this they're song, playing Strong Tower. And so relief kind of puts out its own energy. Like, that song, it, you know, to get really nerdy musically here, in the entire composition of our whole concert, that is like the DC Alcoda. It comes back and resolves.
Yeah.
It offers resolve to the crowd because they're waiting for Strong Tower.
Yeah.
So I love it. I really do. But, you know, the experience of it separated from what the song has become, mm-hmm. you know, that's maturity. I've learned to love it. I've learned to, like I said, with Alpha Omega, I feel like I've learned how to be good at doing that part.
Yeah. Well, and so people know, because a lot of people think that we wrote Strong Tower because right. it was a new song on that record that nobody had ever heard before. Right. In actuality, and again, kind of behind the curtain here, in this whole process of the label wanting a worship record and wanting the right thing at the right time in the marketplace and the right radio single, this was actually a song that was pitched to us.
Yeah, there was a mix of us choosing songs that were like standard worship songs, and we even brought some from like our church background. Like, these are songs that we do all the time.
Yeah.
And then there was a mix of like choosing songs like that and hearing new songs from writers that were submitting songs to us.
Yeah. And so out of Nashville, Mark Bird, who I believe was one of the co-writers of God of Wonders.
Yeah.
And Mark Lee, who
from
is
Third Day.
The guitarist from Third Day, had written this song, Strong Tower.
Yeah.
And so it got pitched to us from, you know, from Nashville. I don't remember who sent it over. There's publishing companies and everybody. These kind of songs are like floating around a lot in Nashville. And so, you know, hey, there's this new project going. Cutlass is going to make a new record. You know,
well, it probably came through our publishing group, and it probably came from whatever representative was working our band yeah. at the time.
And so they bring the song in, and of course, the resume of these songwriters, God of Wonders and Third Day, it's like, well, this has some weight behind it.
Yeah,
you know, this would be. This could be a big song. And so they pitched it to us, and we're like, hey, we'd like you guys to do this song. We think this song would fit on the record. We've got, you know, some really big songwriters that are involved with it. I think it's a great song. Like, there's a lot of wins here. Because the industry people, too, the radio people, they're like, oh, wow, Third Day, God of Wonders, Cutlass, that's intriguing.
Yeah.
Like, let's, you know, people that know some of these names and know these people,
yeah.
like, I want to hear this. Yeah. So there's some buzz to all of that that is helpful, I guess, in mm-hmm. in things continuing to grow. And so, yeah, so they pitched us the song. And to be honest, at the beginning, I wasn't that stoked on it. I was mm-hmm. like, I don't know. And I'd rather write our own song, honestly. Yeah. But with a little bit of pushing and pressure and, you know, like, nah, this is probably what we need to do. We finally were like, okay, fine, let's do it. And then Aaron and I tweaked a few things on the song, just trying to make it a bit more Cutlass, a bit more us.
Yeah.
So I do have a small songwriter credit on it, because we did change some stuff and rewrote a couple little things. But I don't feel like it's my song. So even though my name's on the credits, it's like, that's Mark Bird and Mark Lee's song, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there was a disconnect for us on that song right out of the gates.
Yes.
And like you said, now it's grown to be very identified with us.
Yep.
And it has a totally different feeling
yep.
today, because of what that song's become.
Right.
But at the time when we released it, it was just a song that some guys in Nashville wrote.
Yep.
You know, yep. It wasn't like this, oh, I can't wait to release this song. It's got so much meaning and power, and I loved writing it.
Yeah. And for how I was feeling at the time, I was like, yeah, great. Yeah.
More disconnected.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think that's interesting too, in that the perspective that people have of that is, mm-hmm. oh, this song that Cutlass wrote, that's their song. And we did make it ours because it wasn't out anywhere else. We were the only version on radio. You know, like, it was the first time anybody'd heard this song. And that's normal. I mean, every major artist that you've ever heard sings songs that you think is theirs that was written by a songwriter. Like, it happens
right.
all the time.
Right.
Like, that's very, very normal.
It's been happening since Elvis.
Yeah. yeah, and exactly.
Back before that.
Yeah. If you scroll through all the credits, and you'll notice a lot of times that the artist
yep.
is not the one who wrote the song.
Right.
And that's okay. That happens a lot. And we've done that over our career. We've had songs that were like, this is a great song. We want to put it on our record.
Sure. And sometimes we collaborate with songwriters who aren't in our band.
Yes.
And we develop a song together.
Yeah.
That happens too.
Yeah. That happens a lot, actually. Those co-writes. But those feel a little more intimate because usually one of us is involved in the actual
yeah.
songwriting process. But yeah, so that, again, for that song to be so disconnected at that time seems almost unfathomable today.
Yeah.
Because it's so synonymous with our band and,
yep.
and what we do. But I want to circle back just a little bit before we move on in this story to the band dynamics that were happening at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is something that, again, people don't ever see. And I don't want to be negative or throw anybody under the bus here. But living together with other people who all have their own motivations, and we all have selfishness, and we all have just human nature.
Different personalities.
And you put that in a pressure cooker, and interesting things come out. And so I think in this time frame, so we'd gone through a couple records, things were growing, but I think a lot of the pressure cooker in the first couple records was just enduring hardships, like the January 2004 that we talked about, just enduring the road, surviving, getting to the next show, those kinds of things. What shifted here with Strong Tower was now we were starting to deal with the pressures of fame and success. And I think with that, as young men, all of us being young, you start to have to deal with ego and pride.
Yep.
And I think validity too, in am I valid, the praises that I'm getting, am I worth those?
Yeah.
People are putting me on a pedestal and lifting me up. And inside, I know that I'm not that great. Mm. And so externally, I want to validate that I belong here, that I deserve to be on this stage, because inside I know I probably don't. And so then I think, and again, this
and common among most, if not all men, is a deep desire for affirmation.
Totally. And to be like have value and purpose.
Yeah.
I think that's another thing that's like, at least within me, very deeply rooted of I want what I do to matter.
Yeah.
I want the things that I am doing, I want my contribution to matter. And so you couple that with ego and fame, and it can get, as far as interpersonal relationships go, it can get really tricky, because now all of a sudden I'm going, well, I look at you and I go, I'm going to put us on a ladder here. Am I more validated than you in what we're doing, or less? Mm-hmm. Are you above me on this, like, deserve to be here, or below me on this deserve to be here? And then it can become a competition between us to go, well, as long as I'm not the weakest link, I'm not the one that is clearly not supposed to be here, you know? Like, so I got to just be above the other guys. And so I felt like, and I don't know, maybe you can speak to this a little bit more, but I felt like there was a bit of internal tension between our band members. Like you said, for me, it was because I was, as the front man and as the voice, I honestly didn't even really want that attention, but it just came with the territory.
Yeah.
But but for you guys, I did feel like there was a little bit of this push, pull, tension, struggle of, I don't know exactly how to like phrase it, but this like wanting validity to be here, I belong here, or my role's important here.
Yeah. And a deep seated like issue of mine is like, if I don't feel like that's genuinely coming from people towards me already, I will not fight for recognition. I'll just be like, well, screw you guys, I'm gone. Like that's my MO in a lot of different areas of life, is like, I'm not going to fight for you to recognize me. You either do or you don't.
Yeah.
And so I would tire very quickly of how, cause I want unity. That's what I'm striving for all the time emotionally among the interconnectedness of relationships.
Yeah.
And so like, I would wither pretty quickly with like the competitive stuff. And I would just, that's why I started to just leave all the time.
Yeah.
And I couldn't endure it. I literally would be like, I don't want to be here. I'm leaving.
Yeah.
And I would just go.
Would you agree though, there was a bit of internal competition happening?
Yeah.
You feel that way?
Yeah.
And sometimes it was in the way people dressed, or the way people performed on stage, or the way that, well, like,
the competitive disease started to affect everything. It was all of those things.
Yeah.
It was any and all of those things started to be competitive. And I was like, I hate this so much.
Yeah. And even like in a photo shoot, it's like, where am I standing in relation to the other people? Where are they standing?
Yeah.
And that happens between bands too. Like on a tour, you're like, is our band better than that band? Is our show better than their show?
Yeah.
Do we need to level up so that, you know, we look better, or
yeah.
Yeah. Are our riffs cooler than your riffs?
Yeah. And that was something I had to deal with in a really deep way. That was an area of pride and jealousy that I had to surrender to the Lord. I had like almost a, you know, like when you have to get a spanking and then you like sit in God's lap and yeah, let him
I'm sorry.
Restore you and tell you, you know, his plan for you again. Like when we were making It Is Well. So again, mm-hmm. we had done Strong Tower.
Yep.
We had then swung the pendulum back with a couple rock records. Now it was time to make another worship record. Are you guys a worship band or a rock band? Are you guys a worship band or a rock band? How heavy is it going to be? What is this project? So now we're making another worship album. And I was like, again, internally conflicted and mad about it because I was like, I just want to do cool riffs. It's not fair that these other bands get to do cool riffs. And I was jealous. I was really jealous of their skills, their abilities, their ability to just be a rock band and not, quote unquote, have to go do a worship album now.
Yeah.
And honestly, I really felt like I got disciplined hard from the Lord during that time. And one of the things that was an outcome, and it's still true to this day, because of that deep-seated jealousy and how poisonous I felt it was, and how much it sidelined me from being able to be present in those friendships and be happy for my friends that were doing sick riffs. I literally banished the word jealousy from my daily usage. So like, you know how people kind of flippantly, you know, they see like, oh, you went to that restaurant. So oh, jealous. So jealous. Yeah. I do not ever say that anymore. And I'm not trying to say I'm better than people that say that. But for me, yeah. I had to literally stop saying jealous. I had to stop using that word at all. And I like completely took it out of my daily usage vocabulary because, you know, we've got a lot of really talented friends.
Yeah.
Josiah from Disciple, Andrew, all those guys, Noah Henson from Pillar all these years. Like,
yeah.
I love these guys and they're so talented and I want to be excited for them in a genuine way. Or, you know, taking it out of music, for example, one of my friends, you know, I love golf. I've talked about that a lot.
Yeah.
One of my friends went to Australia, and was at a golf tournament where he was literally following Tiger Woods around the course. And he was sending me pictures from this event all day. And he's like 5 feet away from Tiger. Yeah. And like, he sent me a bunch of pictures. You know what's awesome about that? Everything.
Yeah.
I want to be the friend that you're excited. Oh, dude, I got to send these pictures to James. He'll be so stoked to see this.
Yeah.
And if you have jealousy as like your primary response all the time, guess what? People are not going to send you those texts anymore.
And it ruins the whole thing.
Yeah.
Ruins
and people it for are you, not going to be them. Like, oh, dude, we got this awesome tour and or check out this awesome song. Like if I'm always like, oh, I'm so jealous. You know,
yeah.
That ruins things. And I felt like that was happening internally with us. And I just hated it so much.
Yeah.
But then I fell victim to it as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, all these years later, I understand that I was a young man dealing with brokenness in not so great ways. And the way that I was like sheltering myself and basically like removing myself from our environment was also not helping anything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's funny because I think the jealousy thing for me took on a completely different form. Mm. Again, because of my personality. What really bothered me was when I would see artists or other people not work half as hard as we were working, putting out music that I was like, isn't really that great.
Wow.
And then it would blow up and they'd be super successful and they'd be making more money than us. They'd have bigger tours than us. Like it was just going for them.
That's interesting coming from you in the context of like your life story episode, like, you know, the work hard, the perfectionism, striving to be doing enough always.
Yeah, because in my mind, they shortcutted it. Mm-hmm. They didn't work hard and they got the outcome that I was trying for by working hard.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
and nothing bad happened to them. And you're like, everything keeps going wrong. For
us. Yeah. I keep doing the right things and stuff keeps going bad and wrong and it gets harder and harder. And I look at them and I'm like, you're screwing around, not even trying. And everything you touch turns to gold. Like what the heck, you know? And so I feel like that was a theme throughout our career when you would watch. Because really, music industry is weird like that, where you can have just the right song at the right time in the right place, and it can just launch you almost overnight into the stratosphere.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even matter how good of a singer you are or how hard you've been working. If that goes, it goes, and you just hop on the ride, you know?
Yeah.
And there are some people that we've been around and have, you know, interacted with that I'm like, how in the world did that person see as much success as they did, because they're a mess, like, you know, and whatever happened, happened. But yeah, so it was kind of a different, for me, it wasn't so much in the riffs or in the exposure, or the fame or any of those things. It was like the, yeah, it was like when stuff went well for somebody that I was like, it shouldn't have, and but it should have for me. And so that was kind of, I would say, my struggle more in that space of really trying to be, you know what? I should be happy for that person.
Yeah.
Their career blew up. That's good. Great for them. Like, high five. I should be happy for them. Not like, what? You shortcut it.
Yeah.
You know, and feeling all like jaded about it. But all that to say, just to kind of come back and we can kind of start wrapping this up. And I'm sure we'll come back to some of these things because this became a theme for the rest of our career. Worship band, rock band. What are you guys? You know,
is it going to be heavier than Hearts of the Innocent? Yeah.
And so that trajectory really started with Strong Tower.
Yeah.
And I would say that today, as we sit here in 2023, that's still hard for us. Like, I still am bothered by the fact that that question gets asked all the time.
Yeah.
Because I think I would agree with you in that we never set out to be this worship band. And as I said before, Strong Tower was like this side project that almost like forcibly became our identity because of its success.
Right.
And in hindsight, we have, like you said, we've grown to embrace that and accept that and be grateful for that. But I think we also feel a little bit misunderstood sometimes.
Yeah.
And like people don't know us at times. Yeah. They know what they've seen. They know what they've experienced.
Yeah.
And so we have almost this false relationship with people sometimes. And what that looks like today, I would say, is like we get calls to be like, hey, can you guys come, can your band come play Sunday morning at our church? And we're like, no. And they're like, well, why not? That's ministry. That's, you know, it's a worship band. You guys are a worship band. And we go, but that's not what we do.
Another weird thing that happened because of this is it split our audience into two audiences.
Yeah.
And neither of them were happy when we would do the other thing.
Yeah.
Our hard rock audience was like, you guys suck now. And then the people that came to our shows because they love Strong Tower and other songs like that, when we would play heavy, they'd be like, how dare you guys play music like that?
Why are you screaming at me?
Yeah. And so that has been hard to deal with. And also, just logistically, it's hard to craft a set list that will please both. And we're like, goodness.
Because we have to play Strong Tower on our shows. We just do. Like you said, people want to hear that. And when we play it, it resolves. And people are like, this is awesome. And so it's just a part of our show now. It's part of who we are. It's a part of our story. And we've had to embrace that.
Yeah.
Just like there's other hard things in our lives that we've had to embrace as part of our story, our personal stories.
Right.
You know, like I went through this, that is now part of my story. I wish I wouldn't have gone through it, but it's a part of me now. And I think Strong Tower has become that. It's a little different than I had thought or than I had planned or than maybe I had wanted, but it's a part of my story now and it's part of who I am. And I think as we've grown and matured, we've done a better job of embracing that.
Yeah.
However, where we are today, we're going, you know what? We're going to be true to who we are, and we're doing things in a way currently where we don't want to keep kind of ping-ponging back and forth and trying to appease the entire audience of everyone and saying, okay, well, we got to be both. Because that was our answer. Well, we're both. Yeah. Because rock band and worship band, we're like, we're both. I would say now, in this season, what I want to change is, are you rock band or worship band? We go, no, we're us.
Yeah.
We're us.
Cutless.
We're cutless. And what does us mean? It means where we're at today, right now, being honest, vulnerable, the music we want to make. You know what? If we want to make a worship record next year, we can. Mm-hmm. If that's where we're at and we're like, this is what we need to do, this is what we're stoked about.
I don't want to, by the way.
I get the point.
Yeah,
I was going to say, I doubt that's going to happen.
I get the point you're trying to make.
But we could if we want to.
Sure.
If that's what, you know, if we want to make a polka record, we could.
Polka.
and we could do that, but taking those trappings away of what the market has told us we have to be, of what people have said we've had to be, the pressures that have kind of said this needs to look like this or be like this, we're really trying to just scale that back and at this point be like, we're going to be ourselves to the world. We're going to share ourselves with the world. We're going to share the music that is us, of what is inside us.
Yep.
And
like this podcast, we want to use our music to say the things that are too hard to say sometimes.
Yeah.
We want to just go ahead and take that step forward and just say it anyway. Because, you know, like one of our upcoming songs is about what it feels like to be betrayed by other Christians. And I am almost positive that everybody has felt that before. So let's put a song out about that.
Yeah.
Because everyone's gone through it.
And it may not be as marketable, or it may not be what the market is doing. But at this point for us, that's not what it's about.
Right.
And I think...
And it comes back to me, like, not to sound too lofty or anything or prideful, but like to me, it reminds me of like the duty of the prophets in the scriptures. Like they were told to say things that were truthful about what was happening within God's, the group of God's people and within culture, right? Mm-hmm. They were compelled by the God of the universe to say these things. And they could have tried to assimilate to what was easier to say, more palatable to the audience.
Yeah.
But I honestly just feel like a responsibility to just say these things as we see them and as we are feeling them, and music that feels more authentic to me as a songwriter.
Yeah. And I think in that we're also rediscovering what it looks like to be healthy men and to move through life in integrity and in honesty, relationally. It's different than if everything is about trying to move the needle forward, success, make the right calls. And not that all of those things are bad, but if that's your driving factor, you lose a lot of the beauty of who you are. And a lot of the
authenticity.
Yeah, and who we are. And so I'm really excited for this kind of new season of music, new season of ministry, new season of the podcast, to be able to, I think, do something that we never felt like we totally had the freedom to do in the past.
Yep.
Because we needed to mature to the place where we could just be okay with the challenges that come along with that. Because it's not easy. It is challenging to be authentic, and it is challenging to go against the pressures of what everybody else is doing or saying.
And it's challenging to look back at our own failures and accept them.
Yeah.
And be like, and not try to whitewash them and be like, oh, I wish I could change that.
And then to put them on a podcast and tell everybody about how we feel about them.
Yeah. Oh, that was... There is something therapeutic about this for sure.
Yeah. Also very challenging, but hopefully it is helping you guys. I hope this stuff's been encouraging to you, and we thank you guys for listening. And you definitely get the behind the scenes, deep in-depth look. It gets real authentic here.
True.
on this podcast. So thank you guys for listening. And we'll be back another week and a half with another episode. And it's going to keep coming. We got, again, lots more coming. So subscribe to the podcast. Also shoot us an email at podcast@cutlass.com. We'd love to hear your comments, your stories, and we'd love to share some of those stories in future episodes and questions, things like that too. We'll bring some of that stuff on, onto the podcast.
And give us a review and share it with some friends. That's how, you know, our podcast continues to grow and get out to more people. Yep. I feel like these conversations we're having are important to share with more people. and include them in this.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Yeah. And that really is, if people are like, why would I leave a review? Why does that matter?
It does help more people find our show.
Exactly. It does. Yeah. So if you think this is valuable content that can help people, share it with people and yeah, leave those reviews. And it does the algorithms and things like that. It does help yep. the podcast become more noticeable for people.
Algorithms.
So, algorithm. What did I say?
Algorithms. Algorithms.
Technology. The robots are going to take over the world.
The robots. All right. Well, hey, we love you guys so much. Thanks for tuning in to Rockin' a Hard Place.
See you next time.
Bye.